Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm Aidy Packham and we are having our wings clipped in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, it was another frustrating afternoon for the Albion last Saturday as we returned from Stamford Bridge with no goals and no points. And if it wasn't for Matty Ryan, it could have been a lot worse than a 2-0 defeat. Today we face a Spurs side who had a humbling in midweek, shipping 7 goals at home to Bayern Munich, and some are fearing a backlash. But can we hit them when they were down? One thing's for certain, we don't want to go into the international break in the bottom three. Joining me today is not Alan Wears, who is missing in action, but we do have Andy Bass. And for the first time this season, we welcome Brian Owen. Brian, welcome back to the show. It's lovely to have you in again.
Hi, Eddie. First time this season, is it?
So I missed the win. You missed the win.
Yeah.
But it's,
yeah.
I mean, a lot's changed for you since the last time you were in. Obviously, Andy Naylor's now left the Argus. So I guess, does that make you the chief sports?
Not officially. There isn't one. I'm sort of doing things Andy used to do and things that I used to do. We've got a young bloke, Adam Stenning around,
yeah.
Who's, it's different. It's obviously not a like-for-like replacement, so to speak. So he does things that Andy didn't do, and obviously Andy did things that Adam...
Yeah, I mean Adam's obviously a lot younger and better looking than Andy ever was, so it's...
he is, yeah, younger, and he does different things. You know, he can do sort of podcasts and production stuff, but obviously a lot of things Andy wasn't able to do, but hopefully I can do. So yeah, we're getting by so far.
Yeah, Andy as well, welcome back. First time back in since the preview, I think. And so how's the season been going for you so far?
It's been all right. Quite enjoyed it. You know, last Saturday notwithstanding, the football's just been a lot easier on the eye. And yeah, whilst it's frustrating that we haven't managed to accrue many more points, I just feel optimistic for the future. If we can just get over this hump and start getting a few goals.
Now, I mean, there's been a lot of talk, Brian, about the fact that we've been unlucky and our XG, whatever that is. I still don't know what XG is.
Graham Potter mentioned it actually, and I'm not totally sure what it is.
But it says that we've been unlucky, that we're creating chances, and apparently Pascal Gross is third highest behind De Bruyne. I can't remember who the other one was, but in creating chances, but we're just not taking any of these chances, really.
Yeah, is it unlucky? I'm not sure. Maybe there have been a few moments of bad luck. I mean, the goal that was disallowed, the first VAR one, it was offside, but it was very close to being onside. They've missed some chances. I'm thinking of Mopay to win the game against West Ham, maybe to put Burnley further out of reach. Yeah. You said frustrating at Chelsea. I think that's the first game that wasn't frustrating. It was just disappointing. The frustrations have been Newcastle away, and how close was that? Aaron Connolly wants it going in.
Yeah, well, millimetres, really.
Burnley home, West Ham home. Those have been frustrating. Yeah. Chelsea, I wouldn't call frustrating. I would just say it was quite...
Well, I was actually frustrated, and I'll tell you why shortly. I mean, let's talk about the Chelsea game then. And it was the first start under Graham Potter for Yves Bissouma, and the second start for Stephen Alzate and also for Aaron Moy. We lined up with four at the back, with Byrne playing pretty much as an orthodox left-back.
Yeah, well, Alzate was still coming back as well. I mean, I looked at it to look at the formation, and the way the game started, it was like five all back, Alzate having to defend. So I think it's an interpretation of his little wing back role, which he's got as well. And then obviously they made the switch. Graham Potter said he was almost a bit unfair on Yves Bissouma, putting him in for such a tough game, and he had a certain role to play which just didn't work.
Yeah,
and Alzate probably is more of a comfortable position for him, but.
Yeah,
and obviously Montoya back. He was who's missed a game recently. He did quite a decent job.
But there was a massive Davy Proper shaped hole in the side.
Yeah, there was. And I think we were talking just earlier. It's one of those you notice him when he's there, but you probably noticed him a bit more when he wasn't. And that was a surprise. Him and Stevens were both doubtful. And fortunately, Stevens made it. Not proper.
But it was. I mean Dale. I mean Aaron Moy's second touch was mostly a tackle. Bissouma didn't want to tackle at all. I mean, he had one good action in the first half, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I mean, Dale was basically having to do the work of both of those players at times, and it was a struggle.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think Stevens has had an excellent season so far. I think Potter's remoulded him very, very nicely this season. But it was just a powder puff midfield against Chelsea, and we just weren't able to stop or interrupt them with any kind of regularity at all. We just got bypassed. It was a poor performance. That's the first time I've been disappointed with the team.
I mean, there was going into the game. There's all these stats about the fact that we'd never won there, and there's also the stats about the fact that Chelsea hadn't kept a clean sheet all season, including against Grimsby of all teams. So I mean, there was a lot of positivity going into the game.
Yeah, but I think that's the best I've seen Chelsea start a game going up there with watching Brighton, the three matches. They obviously hadn't won at home in the league under Lampard, and I'm sure they saw Brighton at home, and it was like, it's now or never sort of thing to get that. Right. Well, not now or never, but it's a golden chance to get that home win.
They would have thought about Sheffield United as well, wouldn't they?
Well, they probably would, but then they hadn't got it. I'm sure how they would have thinking as they prepared for the Brighton game. And the more you wait, probably the more eager you are, and they played quite well against Liverpool. I didn't see it, but apparently played well against Liverpool.
Yeah.
And I just got, they looked like they really had the bit between their teeth as well. And it was that balance after Graham Potter talking, Glenn Murray talking, concentrating on how good they were. Brighton were disappointing, but they were good. And it was that balance, how good were Chelsea and how poor were Brighton.
Well, I mean, there was that, and we had Matty Ryan to thank for a string of fantastic saves that he made in the game. But we also did create some opportunities in that game before Chelsea opened the scoring. In fact, in the first half, I mean, we were talking earlier, Andy, about the chance that Pascal Gross had when he was in the identical position to where Willian was when he actually scored, and he didn't take on the shot. And that seems to be a recurring theme this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just lost count of the amount of times I was just screaming shoot. Both first and in particular second half, because they were kicking towards us. But it was really frustrating. It was just like a lot of dithering and a lack of decisiveness. And I don't know, and I found that quite concerning, because I wasn't sure where that had come from and like how players have been like schooled to prepare for, you know, what to do when they're in certain situations, when you get into that final third, what's the balance of probabilities where you think it's worth playing it in or actually taking a shot? Because we weren't really getting any decent balls into the box at all.
Well, no, I mean, the game plan was quite obviously to play the ball into the left-hand channel and down to where Aspilicueta was defending. And we pinged that ball into that corner time and time again, and we weren't getting anything. I think the plan was, because Chelsea have been particularly susceptible from set pieces, was to try and get corners and stuff. But we didn't get a corner until the 71st minute, and that tells you how that game plan went.
I thought they thought they could get a Mopé in behind their defence. Yeah. It was a back four, wasn't it? Which I don't know that we were expecting it to be. And there was one where Montoya played him through, and it was, I mean, he was very close to get onto it. Kepa got there. But that was what I thought their plan was, just get it. There was a big gap between the penalty area and that back four. And they thought Mopé could get in there. And he sort of, a couple of times he chased balls out wide, and he had that one where he's played through the middle and he very nearly reached it. But there weren't too many. But that's, as I read it, what they were trying to do.
Yeah, so, I mean, there was that one. There was also the chance that, it's probably not gone down as a chance, but I actually think it was, where Adam Webster brought the ball all the way out, and he managed to get to the edge of the Chelsea area, and it was opening up for him. And he had space to get a shot away, and he decided to pass it. And it's just that decision-making when you're in that position. The shot was definitely on there.
Yeah, given that they completely fizzled out as soon as the ball eventually left his foot. Yeah, that was frustrating, and you just thought, you know, he should have had a go, because it was an excellent run.
He's done a few of those, hasn't he?
Yeah.
One of them might even decide the title, that one at Man City that led to Laporte being injured.
That's possibly become
his trademark.
Yeah. But how do you feel about? I mean, we're talking to Guy Butter shortly, but I'm going to ask him about the Central Defenders Union. But what was your theory on having Shane Duffy being replaced after being so key last season?
Well, it's interesting how he made all that. He brought four or so players in, and they sort of, there were no debutants in the first match. Then there was one. Then there was two. He's obviously brought Adam Webster in for a reason, to play a certain role for a certain way that he plays. And my reading is that Shane Duffy doesn't quite suit that quite as well. He can do it, but Webster is a better bet in Potter's eyes in that particular role. And we just talked about, I don't see Shane Duffy carrying the ball forward in the way that Webster has. And when they then tried to play a certain way against Burnley, it quickly reverted to a 4-4-2.
Yeah.
So I think it's, in a way, horses for courses, if you like, but the course that Potter prefers to take more suits Webster. But Duffy's fine if he has to.
Yeah.
If he has to use him.
And Andy, I mean, Duffy, I mean, he's more of a goal threat as well.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, actually, I think that might be his route back into the team if he could start nodding a few more goals in from his position. But yeah, I mean, I think the way that Potter wants to set the team up, I don't think Duffy is going to be like plan A for that at all. And it's just the tactical switch and the culture change at the football club now.
Yeah. Okay. Now, Alonso's been a bit of a pantomime villain in the games against Chelsea over the last couple of seasons, and he did nothing different in this game. And was he lucky not to see red?
What do you think?
Well,
you've seen him given.
Yes,
I've seen him given, but he really, he did lead with the arm. He did lead with the arm, and I think he knew what he was doing. But he didn't really hammer him in the face. So, but yeah, I think normally the referee would give that as a red card. But I think in the real, you know, I think in a normal world, I think actually yellow probably was sufficient for me.
VAR would have looked at it, presumably.
Yeah, must have. I suppose you've got that reassurance. Somebody somewhere is viewing it with expert eyes. Yeah. Maybe it depends on your age as to what you think a red card is. Because Adam, my young colleague, as we said, he was saying that was a red card. And I was sort of thinking, no, I didn't really look. It wasn't like he went up and clouseted him with his elbow.
It's like he pushed his arm into his face. I mean, the arm was away. Definitely, for the purposes of radio, I am now pushing my forearm into the air.
But it looked more like a sort of a flimsy flailing arm than that arm that you just waved.
It wasn't
me.
Like a an elbow.
I mean, you can file it under seen and given, but I can guarantee if that was a Brighton player doing it, I know
he'd have been sent off. Yeah,
and there would, you know, match of day might have even actually shown the highlight. It was
right.
It was one of those.
I've seen Alexander Frutos sent off for less at Withering.
I've definitely seen players sent off for less. I mean, I think he did. I think he didn't get sent off because the contact was not vicious. But you know, it's just like the, you know, are the rules or not? I don't even know anymore. It's so head spinning.
But as you say,
the way the laws are interpreted.
Somebody who knows all about was watching that, and they can make a mistake, a judgment, but it's not a judgment made running across or with a player in front of you or whatever. So I suppose you should have faith in that it's been reviewed. And
what was the worst tackle you've seen that was not given as a red card, you think, against?
Oh gosh.
I've got a whole catalogue of them in my head, all in the same game by the same person, actually. But
was there a Joe? Well, it's not a tackle. Are you thinking of Joey Barton?
Joey Barton.
Oh, Joey Barton. Yeah, obviously.
Against his one man crusade against
Baron Kyle. Yeah.
I can't believe he didn't get sent off for the stamp
or the elbow.
Just blatant.
And then you've got the decision that pretty much cost Toma Hamedi's Brighton career, really.
Yeah.
As well. And which for me was accidental or not, wasn't even a card in my view.
No, it wasn't. Well, the referee called it right. Mm. Didn't give it as a foul.
Yeah, but that was sort of a VAR in a way, wasn't it? Because it was watched on a screen. So I suppose these days would have been sent off.
Possibly.
Might not have won the game.
Okay, well, let's talk about what our man of the match, which was Matty Ryan.
Yeah, well, there was no other candidate. I don't think the on-field 10 really did a lot to earn many plaudits at all, because I thought it was a uniformly disappointing performance from all of them. Ryan. The interesting thing about Ryan is he didn't actually have a save to make until about the 35th minute, and then he had to make about three. He had to make another couple before half time. and they made some very good saves in the second half.
I think the one that stands out for me, Brian, was the one from Ross Barkley, which is basically point blank range.
Yeah, I think he should have scored Barkley. I think that was the eye catching one, and that is the one that you remember. But there was one when Tammy Abraham was clean through in the second half. I think it was 2-0 by then. And he just made it. He just gave Abraham nowhere to put the ball. And then even when Abraham tried that little flick, he managed to stick his hand up. So I actually thought, not being a goalkeeping expert, but I thought maybe that was the better save, even if it wasn't quite the most eye-catching one.
Okay. He kept us in the game. I mean, you know, if we'd have pulled one back at 85 minutes, then
or drawn, one-one.
Yeah, with confidence, with Chelsea's confidence at home not so great, that could have sent them spinning. So okay, well played,
well,
Matt.
Okay, well let's just talk about the penalty. There, what, are we all agreed it was a penalty?
Yeah
absolutely.
So I mean. Did the whole faffing or dilly-dallying around at the back, I mean, it's always going to... If a team is pushing you high up the pitch like that, you're always asking for trouble, aren't you?
Well, what was infuriating about that was that Chelsea had really got our number by that stage. I mean, you know, we'd done well to keep it to 0-0 at half-time, really only conceding shots in the last 10 minutes. And then we just gift them the goal. I mean, Chelsea were not allowing us to play it out at the back. They had like three players pressing all the time. And that was just inevitable. And it was a really bad touch from Webster. The ball just bounced off his foot, you know, 2 feet in front of him. And he could do nothing more than bring the guy down.
But VAR did have a look at it for quite a while.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I think they just have to, don't they? It's like with the disallowed Lewis Dunk goal against, was it Burnley? Southampton.
Yes.
you think they could, if VAR wasn't there, they could have made that decision themselves. But if it's there, you'd probably be silly not to check. But definitely a penalty. That said, I don't know if you're coming on to the second goal, but it's, you know, you can give the ball away going long as well. So yeah. It's the execution, I suppose.
What are your thoughts on VAR so far, Brian?
I don't think we've had a wrong decision because of it. I think it's a thing you've got to get used to, isn't it? I mean, I that first one, the West Ham game, I think we all thought it was a goal. The second one was a bit different because it was a decision made on the field which was confirmed. I think it feels cruel. That's the one thing I would say.
Especially,
it does. But I suppose if it was coming up with a wrong decision, if you didn't agree with the decisions, that would be the worst thing. But I think it's just an adapting. You know, we're writing about the goal was scored and it's what have you. I don't know if they should put the score up. I don't know if it's a small thing, but it's something like the crowd perception. For example, when Dunk had the goal disallowed and when you see the scoreboard and it's got 1-0 straight away, and maybe not to put that up until the goal has been validated. It might only be a small thing, but it might be takes away that perception of a goal's been taken off sort of thing.
Do you think it's going to get to the point, Andy, where people do actually stop celebrating?
Yes, I do. I just think, well, certainly for us anyway, because none of our goals seem to be legitimate goals, and we score very few in, you know, to begin with, so it's always more cruel. I think the thing that annoys me about VAR is the decisions that they don't make. I mean, they want to get the microscope out for offsides, but you can like jump on an attacker's back and floor him, and because the referee didn't deem it a penalty, you go, well, that's all right then. Well, it's clearly a penalty.
I mean, it's just a joke. The whole clear and obvious thing is just a phrase that's been used. It's been bandied around a lot, but it's not something that's actually being used. I mean, the offside thing is just a farce. I think I leave it down to the linesman, and if it's horribly wrong, I mean, we've said it before. It's possibly not the interpretation is possibly right, but it's the law that needs changing.
Yeah, they need to change the offside law. I mean, to take into account VAR.
Mm. I mean, bearing in mind it was there to stop goal hanging. Someone's being a quarter of a millimetre nasal hair's length offside. No one's going to particularly bat an eyelid about it, and that's what annoys me about it.
But yeah, I thought, I mean, you know, our opponents this weekend, Spurs were on the rough end of a really bad one at Leicester.
Yeah.
With, I think it was Aurier was just like, you know, I mean, it was a pixel out. How can you say that that is 100% accurate?
No, you just can't. It's about when the ball leaves the foot. It's a conversation we're going to be having all season, I reckon.
But it is, and it's
one of those. Okay, well, Jorginho did convert the penalty. Obviously, Matty obviously had some sort of intel that says he likes to go down the middle, so he didn't move. But it was a decent penalty, I suppose. But we did have opportunities to level it. Aaron Moy, in one of the good moments he had in the game, actually put through Neil Maupay, but he was waiting for support, which never came, and the move broke down. And then, as I mentioned earlier, I think our plan was to get set pieces in the game, and we got our first corner in the 71st minute, and there, Julie nearly scored for it. It was like we should have scored from it, Brian.
It should have done, but I don't know about if it's a plan to win a set piece. I thought Alzate was trying to find the bottom corner the way he won it, and that was really close. When you look back, he beat two players, hit that shot, and the deflection almost took it.
Lovely
spinning.
Body movement from him.
Yeah, so it wasn't really sort of trying to force a set piece. I thought he was actually going to hit the player's hands, but it was all right. It was in a reasonable position. But just the spin on the ball, because where we're sitting, obviously you probably behind the goal, we're to the side of the goal, and you can't tell how close it is. When you look at that, how it deflected, and then went in a sort of a semicircle and was really close to, and the keeper was watching it. Mm. Yeah, so that was probably Brighton's best moment of football individual.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk to you about the kids a little bit later on, but let's talk about Alzate, because I mean he started the last two games. Chances are he's probably going to start again today, I would imagine. He's been impressive, but he's also been very frustrating. And the diving again, he got booked in this game for.
Yeah, I did ask Graham Potter about that in his press conference on Thursday, and his answer is in the paper today, actually. So. I just think he's almost come from nowhere, hasn't he? Aaron Connolly, we're perhaps surprised at how quickly it's happened, but not that it has happened. Alzate had gone off to Swindon and off on loan, and then suddenly he's playing in these pre-season games. I think the thing about him is he can almost play, well, Potter says he can play anywhere except centre-back, because he's just got that sort of awareness and he's good on the ball and sort of footballing intelligence. So we put him on right wing back at Bristol Rovers for his debut, where he never played. Left wing back away to Newcastle, where he'd never played, and he just looked so at ease. And after the Newcastle game, I did make inquiries, because he was still on his contract, obviously, that he'd had when he was on loan at Swindon. I said, you know, is there a new contract in the offing? Because he was under contract for another couple of years, or nearly 3 years, as it was. And I've got a no comment, obviously. But now, with not a surprise, I don't think, that he's now got that new deal, which I suspect reflects him as a Premier League
regular
in the last couple of weeks. International call-up for Colombia under 23s and still to make his home debut.
So we have got a Colombian winger that he's actually playing at the moment. Although the word on the street is that he's back at Jose Escuero's back out on the grass.
He's out doing very gently. It sounded very gentle exercises, just the first time he's been out there I think they said rehab equipment, so it's a long way off.
Andy, we were talking earlier about the fact that we think that Jose under the Potter regime could actually be a sensation.
Well, it could be, but I mean, coming back, I think with all these great flair players, are they ever the same after a serious injury? Because when your main asset is your speed, you lose a couple of paces off that, then you're just not as effective. So. I'm not holding my breath on that one.
Do you think he came back too soon last season?
Well, I thought he looked leaden-footed last season. He was not. I think he came back too soon.
Right. He needed a second opt, didn't he? Which suggests he did. Yeah. Plus his performances. But whether that could have been judged beforehand, I really don't know.
Okay, so the Albion did hit the bar from the resulting corner on 71 minutes, where he they're always told to head it down, aren't we? But it's when you head it down and it bounces over, it's kind of, I mean, everyone was all beaten, all ends up, and it's just frustrating that they are susceptible to him, and we've got the big guys that could have, I think we could have had a lot more joy if we could have got more.
Well, the one positive is he got on the end of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll take that.
Okay. Well, Willian did make it too. It got a deflection of the unlucky Dan Byrne.
The aforementioned person that couldn't get it in the net at one end.
Yeah,
but found the net the other.
But I mean, the stats says that we had 8 shots, but only 1 on target during the whole game. Only 2 corners as well. So, but 47% of the possession, which away at Chelsea, is actually pretty decent.
Yeah, well, I think 2-0 away at Chelsea is respectable if you just saw that as a scoreline. And that was probably the angle that a couple of people I spoke to were coming out from within the camp. But I think it's what the way, if you watch the game, you know, 2-0.
2-0 flattered us.
Yeah, it could have been like 5-1 or something.
2-0 flattered
Whereas
us.
Man City was 4-0, but he went away actually quite upbeat about how Brighton had played.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We brought you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. And I have a shirt of the week for you, Andy. Now, Phil's given me some really, really nice ones over the last couple of weeks. This isn't one of them.
Oh, blimey. But to be honest, this bizarre concoction kind of looks like a rugby shirt to me, given that the Rugby World Cup is on at the moment. It's,
yeah, it does, doesn't it? One of those composite of trying to get every...
Got four quarters. We've got green, red, blue and yellow with sort of some yellow and green sort of claw marks going across it. There's a... what appears to be World Cup Willy on the on one of the sleeves, which I find very amusing for anyone remembering the 1966 World Cup mascot, which is fun. I have no idea where this is from. There's kind of a weird cross in the middle, so I'm going to go like Spain or Malta or something like that.
No, Brian, any ideas?
He's right though. It's like a souvenir. I read. It almost looks. I don't know. It could be Irish. Not sure.
Irish. A hurling shirt.
But I'm going to go. I'd go non-Irish. Say Cagliari or something.
No. This is not even close. And this is what Phil from oldfootballshirts.com has to say about this shirt of the week. And he said, "I picked this one because it's bonkers. quite frankly, it's a 1997 Portuguesa Despotos." shirt, and they currently play in the Campeonato Brasileiro Série D, which is the fourth level of Brazilian football. This is the shirt worn exclusively in domestic cup competitions in the 1997 season, and I guess it was never much a chance of a kit clash, really, with that one.
You could clash with everybody.
Yeah, pretty much.
Apart from Brighton, maybe.
But nevertheless, they didn't actually win any cups.
No.
Their normal home kit is the stuff of nightmares for me. It's either red and green or red and green stripes or red and green hoops. They're formed in 1920. Their nickname is Lusa, and they play at the 25,470 capacity Estadio de Caminde in the city of Sao Paulo. Actually, for a fourth level side in Brazil, have 25,000 seats, which that's pretty decent, right?
Is that some sort of Portuguese origin then, Lusa and green and red?
I would imagine it is. Yeah.
And the bottom is the colours of the Brazilian national team.
Yeah.
So perhaps that's what it is, showing the Portuguese-Brazilian allegiance. But
Their right-back, Bruno Ribeiro, gets an honorary mention for being, well, called Bruno, and playing at right-back. And having a surname that sounds remarkably like the manufacturer of Brighton kits between 91 and 94. He made a handful of appearances for Blackburn in 2012, who also wore Ribeiro kits in the 1990s. Another link to the UK I found is Francisco Amanda Lima da Silva, better known as Mirandina, played 57 appearances for Newcastle between 87 and 89, and after spending a year with Lusa in 1985. Actually, I mean, Mirandinha was one of the early imports, wasn't he?
Yeah, massive folk hero up on Tyneside. So, quite a long time ago now.
Also, one of the subjects, one of my favourite chants from Newcastle fans, which was... his name is Mirandina. He's not from Argentina. He's from Brazil. He's really Brill. Which I just was like, I always think fondly of Mirandina for that very reason.
Well, that is a wonderful reason to remember it. But I mean, when you look at all the foreign imports we have now, and we were talking earlier before we start recording about Alexis McAllister.
Yeah.
And you don't think we'll see him?
No, I don't. I'm not saying I don't think so. I think there's a possibility that Brighton won't see him. I don't know what the situation is with work permits or what have you, but obviously he's made it into the international setup so far for friendlies. It'll help if he stays there for competitive matches. It'll also help put his fee up if Brighton sell him on. He's made more progress than expected, I think. I've obviously trying to be following him as much as possible since he signed. I met him on his day trip to Lansing from Buenos Aires when he flew over. He had a look around, signed his forms, went to the club shop and, well, talked to me and then went home. And since then, Argentina's juniors were down near the bottom. And he didn't sort of play that well initially after he'd signed for Brighton, just probably coincidence, I guess, playing for a struggling team. But since he's gone to Boca, he's obviously started in the Libertadores games. He's come into the league side, played against River, made his debut against River.
He's
played for Argentina.
Well.
Yeah, he's got some pretty good ratings, if you can trust the player ratings in the papers. Average rating when they lost 2-0 at River on Wednesday night. But I think he's done a lot more than expected. So I honestly don't know, but I would be intrigued to see him here. I would like to see him.
And we've also seen Percy Tau. He had got an assist at the Bernabeu this week.
He was on the laptop at Roots Hall in the press box. We were watching that and following it with interest, followed by the Spurs game, actually. So it was quite educational. But you boys might have watched it in more comfortable surroundings, I don't know. if you were watching it or...
I just caught the highlights of that one. I did watch the Spurs game, which was absolutely bonkers, but we're coming to that one shortly. But before we move on, we've just got a quick notice board for you. First of all, there's a local chap who works for the Stag Company. He's a director of the Stag Company in Brighton, and he started a campaign to bring back the Bruno mural. There was a piece about this in the Argus the other day, earlier this week. This year, basically, he says that the iconic El Capitan and Bruno Ribeiro on the wall of Gusto Galato in the North Lanes was removed, causing outrage amongst the Brighton Hove residents, especially Brighton fans. Long-standing loyal supporter Rob Hill, who's the CEO of the Stag Company, was disappointed that the mural was resolved, and he said, "I'm deeply upset that the mural was taken down. Bruno is a Brighton Hove Albion legend and is one of the best players to ever grace the blue and white stripes. He played over 200 games for Brighton and was a great captain and leader and deserves to be recognised for everything he's done for the club." So basically what they're doing, the Stag Company, they're running a competition for someone to design a new mural of Bruno, which will go up on a wall, which the Stag Company are going to pay for. So if you want to get your felt tips out and draw a lovely picture of Bruno, or maybe a picture of Brian Owen, I think there should be a picture of Brian on the wall.
Bruno's probably easier with the bald shaven head and the beard, recognisable.
This is true. So basically, if you just get your felt tips out, the deadline for this is the 31st of October, and you have to visit thestagcompany.com/bringbrunoback. So if you get involved in that, and let's hopefully there'll be a nice big mural of Bruno back in Brighton again. That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Where's that? Is that the same wall, you think, or are they thinking of elsewhere?
I'm not sure. Basically, I think they own a wall down where they are, which is in a similar. It's in the lane somewhere. So
it became a real landmark, didn't it? It was only supposed to be there for a couple of days, I think, initially.
It was brilliant. They should just put the old one back.
That'll work. I think that one was designed by some Sky executive, wasn't it?
For some quick advert, and I think I've seen it on Facebook or somewhere, and then it was supposed to go, but it stayed there, and it almost... The bloke said he kept it there too long.
And then it got vandalised by Palace fans.
Yeah.
The other thing on the notice board this week is something which you've been all over as well, Brian, which is the Albion women's team have announced that they will be hosting another game at the Amex on Sunday the 17th of November with Birmingham City, the visitors. The match will be played during the FA's Women's Football Weekend, an initiative to encourage supporters to attend a women's match during the international break for the Premier League and EFL clubs. Tickets will be available for a bargain £3 for adults and just £1 for under 18s. And if you hold a season ticket at the Amex, you'll be able to claim 2 free tickets, giving you the chance to bring a guest to the game as well. So you've been watching the women's team. A patchy start to the WSL season?
It was, by the way, that game you're talking about, I should mention, is in the middle of an international break. If that affects anybody's judgment on whether to go or not. Very similar, first two games, I spoke to Hope Powell, it was almost like speaking to Graham Potter in that 2 points and they should have had 6. They drew at Bristol City, having missed a penalty in the first half. Penalty saved, but not a great penalty. And in the second game, it was almost like Houghton-esque, the way that they helped protect their penalty area against Chelsea. There's a massive gulf between the top and the lesser teams. held on, went 1-0 up on about the 85th minute, and then conceded, of course, in the first minute of injury time. Was it the day after Burnley? I think it was.
Yeah.
And so it was a little bit like that. They could have had 6 points, they should have had 4 points, and then they were well beaten at Arsenal, which is probably to be expected.
Well, Arsenal are the best team in that league at the moment. Yeah. I mean, they've got some cracking players.
And they scored early, which obviously doesn't help. No. But Birmingham last season was the best home game of the season. And Birmingham were a good side, one of the traditional power, not such powers, but, you know, better teams in the league.
Yeah, and great pricing as well, Andy.
Yeah, brilliant. I'll go along to that, I think. Be nice to have the women's team actually in Brighton, so it would be rude to not go. And I certainly get the impression that there does seem to be been progress with the side this season.
Yeah, I think it'd be nice if they could. I mean, Crawley's not that far, of course. As soon as you get over the A27, but it would be nice to have them more local in Brighton.
I believe there are plans afoot to get them back local again. But I mean, it's obviously a case of having a stadium which is the right size for them to play in WSL. Obviously, they've got if they don't stay in WSL, which is quite possible this season. Mm. Hopefully, that won't happen. But
made some good signings. The French midfielder Léa Lagarec looks really talented from what I've seen, and obviously signed a Dutch defender who's not in the World Cup final, but in the squad that got to the World Cup final. So we'll see. But they, dare we say, they should have more points. They deserve more points than the two that they've got.
Yeah. So the two teams going in sync.
Yeah, very similar. So similar, even to conceding that 91st minute equaliser. Yeah.
But I mean, it is great that we've got the Women's Euros coming to the Amex as well. I don't know what teams are going to be coming here. Obviously, it's a long way off yet. But I mean, if you are watching the England game, which is yesterday, you should be watching the Albion game. But why are they playing at the same time? It's really annoying. But that's also a good reason to go. Okay, well, let's just quickly, before we talk to Guy Butters then, let's just quickly talk about your day trip to Southend. Now, you've had you on before, Brian, and you've mentioned your love of the leasing.com Sherpa Checker Trade LBV thingy, whatever it's called this week.
Love. I find it interesting from the higher club's point of view, and I think maybe you're seeing, we've spoken about Stephen Alzate. The first time I saw him was playing for a very young Albion team at Oxford United when they came from 2-0 down to draw and then win a penalty shootout. So you look at the under-23s, it's bewildering, really. You've got an under-23s team who were all out on loan at good clubs like Leeds and San Paoli, etc. You've then got the three, if you include Baluza, who's with the first team, and then you've got an A team, the under-23s, and then you've got a B team, effectively, it's not what they're called, but it seems to be under-23s who played Tottenham off the Amex last Friday night. And it's partly because of the money that's come into Albion, the investment. It's not that long ago, I can remember, I was talking to Simon Dack, our veteran photographer. It's not that long ago we'd go to Southend to see Brighton's first team thinking they probably won't get anything here.
I used to like our trips to Roots Hall.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. It's a cramped press box, but not quite as cramped on leasings.com trophy night.
Well, you can watch Real Madrid at the game at the same time.
Yeah, and we had a Tottenham fan watching Tottenham Bayern Munich. So, but no, they were like convincing, comfortable winners, and I mean there weren't many Southend fans there, about 600 or so, and it's a tough season for them, but they stayed and clapped them off afterwards. So.
But under Graham Potter, and as his recent team selections have shown, there is a real pathway.
Definitely.
There, and that's got to be encouragement for these guys that are actually now, because I mean you could argue, Andy, that there maybe was a blockage under Chris Heaton for these youngsters.
Yes, I think so. I mean I can see why Chris, you know, chose the teams that he did. I don't really have a problem with the way that Chris did that, but it must be encouraging. I think the much criticised lineup against Villa, I thought was a very useful exercise for the club, because Villa put out a decent team and our sort of like really sort of nearly third string players did acquit themselves very well, and it was interesting watching the highlights of the Southend game. And I quite did that long, was it Longman?
Yeah.
Who came on in the second half against Villa. But he actually looked very good in that game. And that was.
He did miss a couple of sitters.
He wasn't. Yeah, he did miss a couple of buses.
But he was getting into really good positions. And like, we're so used to like churning out centre halves. We are the centre half factory. You want a centre half, just wait till, you know, Brighton's have left school, and then you can and they'll be good. But we are now seeing midfielders come out. We're now seeing we are now seeing forward players. Connolly's playing for us. Gikaris is like, you know, finally got on a score sheet at St. Pauli the other week. And now Zatti's come into the first team as well. So it's not just the Ben Whites and the Lewis Dunks, the production line of centre halves. We're now getting other positions.
Because you were really impressed with Teddy Jenks, weren't you?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely fantastic. I thought he was terrific against Villa. Just run out of puff. I mean, you know, when you play against, the adult footballers, you're just going to get worn out. There's going to be a certain amount of pace and that you just don't experience at under 23 or under 18 level. I believe like Jenks is still 17,
something
is he?
Like he's seen as a youngster in the under 23s. Yeah. I saw him, was it Everton? And it was like a bit of a turn up that he was playing in that match. Longman, you mentioned, spotted playing at Waterhall when he was 10, come down from Redhill in a tournament. He's been with the club for sort of 8 years. And he was exceptional on the Friday night against Tottenham. And when they put out their main team more or less for the representing the first team against Villa, so you thought, well, what's going to happen here? And they played absolutely superb.
There was some absolutely brilliant trolling by Richie Reynolds, actually, just after the Villa game, and he said, "And the under-23s will be back in action again on Friday here."
Well,
it was just genius.
We had somebody in our office saying, "Well, why did they? I had to pay £20 to watch that team, and I can watch them for free on Friday night." And I said, "You won't be watching that team on Friday night. They won't be back out again. It'll be the under-18s, more or less." On Taylor Roberts was there watching. One or two others who I probably didn't recognise were there watching. But I spoke to Ryan Longman after, and exactly, the bloke who's been sitting next to him in the changing room is winning man of the match on Sky Sports. It's got to make you think it's possible.
Yeah. Gun to head, who's the next one to break through?
Oh, gosh. That is a hard question. To break through into the... Well, Belutza is close, isn't
he? Well, he was on the bench on Saturday.
Yeah, and he looked... I'd have to have time to think about it, but then you've got to think, next season, how many of these are going to come back from other places? Ben White is getting great reviews. Ostergaard's getting good reviews.
I mean, you were talking about us going down to Southend for a league match. So just how far we've come. The fact that we have got players on loan at Boca Juniors and at Leeds and at Derby, and they're being their best players. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, we had Sanchez obviously playing at Rochdale in the Carabao Cup.
Yeah, and he saved that last penalty as well. That would have been genius.
If he could have done, yeah. But we had to wait, actually. We were watching it in the press room, waiting for the Villa press conference, and Graham Potter was actually...
He was watching it. He came in and said, "Oh, I didn't know it was on in here."
Oh, did he? Well, it was Dan James as well, wasn't it? His Carabao Cup example, as he told us later in the week, of, you know, what can happen to a young player starting off in that competition. But if you're asking me the next one to break through, I really would have to sit and think about it, because there's so many, which is good, because it's not like it's just going to be Lewis Dunk is the next one, or George Barker, which didn't quite work out. But.
Okay, look, Brian, obviously the you're at the Argus now. We mentioned at the top of the show that the landscape has changed there a little bit. Now, obviously, with Andy gone, now you're now... without having the official told to you, are the chief sports writer. So basically, obviously, it always used to be Andy. It used to write the match reports in the paper.
Yeah.
And that was you.
It is, yeah. Yeah, I've sort of, more or less done most of the things that Andy would do. Maybe, as I say, Adam's taken over things like he's done a live blog on the website, things like that. But, because I mean, it's fairly straightforward. Most of it, I mean, he didn't miss many games, Andy. I think the last one that he missed was probably that one when Glenn Murray scored 4 goals at Wickham. So that part, just doing the report, or it's not even the report these days, it's more a sort of a review, sort of assessment of how things have gone. So that's come to me with my little picture in there. But other than that, it's quite similar. It's not, doesn't feel like a massive change or massive step up. And obviously we still see Andy at games doing his bits and pieces. But and Mike Legg as well, should mention, the third member of our sports desk. We do get him at a lot of the home games, including today against Tottenham. So we're out in... used to be one or two out of the 9 people at the Argus at games. Now it's all three out of 3 on occasions.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tough one, though, really, isn't it? I mean, basically, there's a lot of talk about the local newspapers against what's going on with online stuff, particularly The Athletic, which Andy's gone for. I mean, Andy actually, when he was in here a couple of weeks ago, he suggested that the Argus online content should have been behind a paywall a long time ago when it first started.
I don't know. I mean, I think they have tried that in the past. I don't really question the things too much, but I mean, they're looking at, we have a, you know, close analysis of how many visitors we get into our website, how many hits, what have you. So maybe that's why it wouldn't be, we haven't gone down that way. It's not something I really get too involved with, to be honest. But yeah. I do know that obviously the website figures are massive. We check those almost like every 5 minutes, and you check your circulation.
I don't expect you to comment on this, Brian, but I mean, we all know that people really only ever buy the Argus for your columns and for the sport and for the entertainment in there, because there's not really an awful lot of other content in there. But you don't have to comment on that.
Well, bizarrely, we do so much now on the Albion. We're almost doing, like, I'll sit in the press room afterwards, because we do the Prem, I'll pull out, which is, was supposed to be, we were given a template of putting in reports from all the other games from the Press Association, and I've sort of looked at it, and I think it needs to just be Albion. If we can do that, it's not always possible, but we should really try and do that. And I've had like Paul Hayward or one or two of the other reporters, you know, sitting in the Albion. They say, "How much? What you got to do? 100 words, 200 words, around? What you got to do? Oh, 8 pages." So it's but I would love to, just be nice to have a win, you know.
Yeah,
those ones. And my colleague Mike Legg, I should mention him again. He's more sub editing orientated. He's usually the one who puts the front page together and tries to be a bit inventive. Some weeks I might come up with an idea, some weeks he might, but he's the one who puts it into operation. And they get a bit samey sometimes when it's, you know, unlucky, so close and all this sort of thing.
Okay. Well, we are playing Spurs this weekend. Well, hopefully we will get that win. And that one person we know that has got a foot in both camps is Guy Butters. Guy, are you there?
Yes, certainly.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
It's great. Great to hear you again. Now, Guy, everyone keeps trying to tell me that Spurs are in some sort of a crisis.
Well, I think it's probably just going on for the result the other day in the Champions League, and the you know, a couple of sort of dodgy results and a few sort of iffy performances that they put in. But I mean, you know, you're talking about Spurs here. You know, with the players they've got, I'm pretty sure that they're not going to be for too much longer.
Yeah, I mean, it was a strange summer for them. There's a lot of players that appear that were leaving, and then they weren't leaving, and then they weren't playing, and now they are playing. And Poch keeps throwing his toys out of this pram. I mean, is it a good time to be playing them?
I don't know exactly. I mean, you know, you like to think so. You like to think it being a bit of a lull, and you know, maybe confidence is a bit low, et cetera, et cetera. But then again, it could be a wounded animal situation. You know what I mean? You're conceding 7 goals in the week. I'm pretty sure the fans were, you know, on the phone-ins, et cetera, and online, and, you know, giving the players a bit of stick. And it all depends how they bounce back now. I'm pretty sure that they're going to be professional when they come down, and they're going to, you know, they're going to want to put in a really good performance and prove that everything's all right behind the scenes. But I think it'd be down to us, really. If we get off to a good start and put a lot of pressure on them, then I think we could make it quite tricky for them.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking earlier on the show about people are saying how that Brighton have been unlucky and they've been creating all these chances and not necessarily getting the results that the performances have deserved. But what have you made of Brighton this season?
Yeah, I believe that I'll be the same situation. You know, he's tried a different formation. He's tried a lot of different players in different positions. You know, it'd be a big learning curve for the manager as well, getting to know his players and getting to know what their best positions are. And like you say, the performances so far this season, I think, have been quite exciting. You know, we're certainly going attacking football a lot more this season than what we were last year. Unfortunately, like you said, the results haven't gone our way, but that's not for want of a lack of effort. I think with a little bit more clinical finishing and maybe a bit more luck and a rubber to green, I think you know, we could have certainly had at least sort of 7 or 8 points more than what we got at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the chances that we've been creating, I mean, particularly in the last couple of the home games, it's just been that extra clinical edge, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, you look at the squad and sort of going, you know, up front, we've got a lot of young players that have come in this year. You know, the manager's obviously put a bit of trust in youth, and then they come in, they put in some good performances, and, you know, they're only going to grow stronger, they're going to get more experience, and maybe, you know, the odd chance that they do get when they get a bit older, a bit more experience, maybe they turn them into goals. But, you know, the players around them are working hard. They are, like you say, the beautiful thing about it is we are creating chances. You know, and like you say, the performances have been good. I'm pretty sure sooner or later that we're going to go on a really good run of form, and I'm pretty sure we'll put a few wins together.
Now, Guy, there have been a few changes, particularly in the style of play from last season. I mean, we know that you were particularly close to Chris. I think you did play with Chris, didn't you?
Yeah, I started off at Spurs with him. It was a fantastic time. Obviously, you know, as being as a young kid, just come out fresh faced from school, 16 years of age, to literally on my first day of being an apprentice to go out and train all in with players like, you know, the calibre of Chris Hughton, Gary Mabbott, Chris Waddle. Glenn Hoddle had just left the club, so I was sort of a schoolboy when he was there. And, you know, what a fantastic time to be at a club, you know. And then Terry Venables just was probably about a year odd away from becoming the manager. He's a man who came in my first team debut. So, yeah, it was a fantastic time to be at a club.
But, and were you shocked when with the news when Chris went?
Yeah and no. You know, I can understand both sort of points of view. I think Chris, you know, he had to sort of make do with the players that he had. He had to play a certain style of football. I think he set his stall out to not get beaten too many times. You know, and leading up to Christmas, around that sort of period, when we had the cup run, you know, we were in a good position, a good healthy position, I think. And maybe the cup run and a little bit of a hangover from losing the semi-finals, I think, you know, we sort of formed it a little bit. But, yeah, I can understand why the club did it. You know, and like you say, you look at the... Sometimes in the crowd, I'll do the, you know, I work at the football club, and I'll even in the lounges and talking to the fans and that, and they're sort of saying, oh, you know, they're enjoying football more and this, that, and the other, because, you know, it's a bit, like I said before, it's a bit more exciting. We're going forward, we're getting more attacking chances. But look at the results, and then you sort of say, was Chris right by being a bit more cagey? It's a really fine line, you know, like I said before, for one or two more goals in certain games, and we would have had a lot more points than what we got. So, but I mean, I can understand what a club did it.
With your players head on, Guy, how difficult is it to change style like that? I mean, we've seen like Shane Duffy, for instance, was player of the season this year, and like he's been well, obviously he's injured at the moment, but he's not been in the side for the last few games.
Yeah, I think it's. I assume football's a lot more different to when I played, obviously, because I'm a bit of a dinosaur now. But when I first started off, talking about when I was at Spurs, I came from the youth team, and we used to play a system with, you know, four at the back. But the first team had three at the back. So when you stepped up into playing to the reserve team football, you changed style of play. I'm pretty sure most clubs nowadays will try and get that all the way through the club, if you know what I mean. So whatever the first team do, I think they try and replicate that all the way through the different age groups, so that when they come into the first team, then, you know, they know what they're doing. But like I say, I was quite lucky because I could adapt. So you look at the first team, if all of a sudden there was a few injuries and they wanted to go to a flat back four, I knew how to do that because I played for three years in the youth team. And like I say, I adapted quite well into the first team when they played three at the back. So I think players are pretty much adaptable to it. I mean, look at Dan Burn at the moment. You know, I've never probably seen an overlapping centre-half.
He makes you look short.
I certainly wasn't one. So, you know, it's something different, but it's good to see. You know, who makes the rules on when you should play in football? I'm pretty sure the manager's probably gone out to them and said, you know, if there's opportunities there to go forward with the ball, you do it. Yeah. If you see some space, you know, you make sure you run into that space and fill the hole. So it's pretty good, you know, and I'm pretty impressed with the way they've all adapted to it. I mean, the Burnley game, I think it was, you know, we started off with we went three at the back with that and changed it. And then all of a sudden, you've got Dan Burn playing left back, you know, with the right back. That's probably the biggest back four that I've ever seen in my life. height-wise, but again, they all adapted really well to it. And it just shows, you know, how much of an athlete you've got to be nowadays to play in the Premier League, you know, and adapt to things like that. Because I'm pretty sure in the old days, if you'd have said to me, go and play left back, and I was marking someone like Aaron Lennon, I'm pretty sure that I wouldn't have been marking about the game as much as Dan Burn did against Burnley on, you know, a couple of weeks ago.
But I mean, it is a massive change of style, though, there, Guy. Do you think it's easier for younger players to adapt to what Potter's actually trying to do?
I think so. Yeah, like I say, because I think that, you know, he goes out there and there's no the training they do nowadays. It's more, you know, getting the ball to your feet, passing the ball. They will do drills. Ours was more based on a lot of fitness. You know, it was a totally different era when I played. Like I said, it was, you know, on a Tuesday, you didn't even see a ball. You used to come in and they used to say, jokingly, you know, bring your spikes with you because you literally just find an athletics track and just run around it for fitness. And nowadays, you know, they wouldn't do that sort of thing. So it's a lot more technical. It's a lot more, you know, tactical. And I think they're taught that from a real early age, you know what I mean? So it's, by the time they get up to that first team, then they should, you know what they're doing when they get in there.
Okay, Guy. Well, we'll talk to you a little bit later on in the season about this and obviously your career. But we are running out of time, so just quickly, we just need to talk to you about what you're doing now with Albion Community, and you've got a big day coming up against Everton.
Yeah, the Everton, it's the Albion Community Takeover Day. We're urging every single fan to bring a pound with them. Last year, it worked tremendously well. I think we raised upwards of £32,000, something like that. And they've also, you know, there's been a study out just recently for the football club and the community scheme saying that every pound that they, you know, comes into the club, it basically has a knock-on effect in the local community of the equivalent of £8, really, you know, going out all into the local community, what with, yeah, you know, shops, etc. around it. So, you know, like I said, last year, upwards of 32, something like £1,000, times that by eight, and you're looking at a lot of money that we can spend in the community.
Yeah, and
you know, for all our causes.
That money really does make a difference as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you've been behind the scenes. You've come along to a lot of our stuff, you know, the wheelchair five-a-side things and that, and you actually seen, witness what it, yeah, goes out in the,
I mean, they cost a lot of money to repair, as you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, of course, yeah, especially with Danny Cullett's, right? Yeah, exactly. I think he's broken a few in his time, but yeah, but like you say, I'm at the coalface, and I get to see where it all gets spent, and it's, you know, the amount of work that Albion Community is doing in the community is absolutely tremendous. And I mean, I wouldn't travel down from Southampton to Brighton, yeah, every day if I didn't believe in it, you know what I mean? So I urge all fans, just bring a pound with you, you know, and believe me, it goes a long, long way.
Brilliant. We'll leave it there. Thanks for your time, Guy. We'll speak to you soon.
Thanks a lot. Cheers,
Guy. Thanks. That was Guy Butters there, of course. Of course, he used to play for Spurs. So, what do we think is going to happen this weekend before we finish?
I think we've been discussing between us two scenarios, haven't we? I mean, I can think of two. We talk about a crisis for top six teams. I can think of Arsenal coming down here in a similar situation and losing, and Chelsea coming down here and winning 4-0. And we've done maybe 4-0, but I don't know what we've done both.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think we've got a real chance. I think we've got a real chance. It's not just a bounce back game for Spurs. I think it's a bounce back game for us. Yeah. And I think there's a growing realization within the Albion squad is that, like, just stick it in the flipping net. Come on.
Take the chances early.
Yeah, and I'm under pressure. I mean, there must have been a renewed focus on that. And I think, you know, as much as we're adapting to a new style of play, I think, you know, I think we're going to respond well. And I think against a vulnerable Tottenham defence, who knows?
Were we ever in the bottom three under Chris? I can't remember if we were or not. I don't think we were.
No, I don't think so, unless you include like the first two games coming up or something. No.
Well, that's something that we certainly don't want going into the international break, is it? So, no. But that's all we've got time for. So thank you, of course, to Brian Owen. Thank you to Andy Bass. I've been Eddie Packham. Thank you to Guy Butters as well. And you know what? I really don't know why we do it to ourselves.